5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. U.S. lawmakers divided on Iran nuclear pact. President Barack Obama will have more to say today about the historic Iran nuclear deal when he holds a news conference at the White House to continue promoting the agreement. It will limit Iran's nuclear program in exchange for phased economic sanctions. U.S. lawmakers are giving sharply diverging reactions. VOA's Michael Bowman reports.
Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell blasted the pact as, quote, the best deal acceptable to Iran rather than one that might actually end Iran's nuclear program.
The Iranians appear to have prevailed in this negotiation.
Similarly, House Speaker John Boehner said President Barack Obama abandoned his goals for negotiations with Tehran. By contrast, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi said the accord is, quote, the product of years of tough, bold, and clear-eyed leadership from President Obama. Michael Bowman, The Capitol.
Iraq's army and allied paramilitaries attacked Islamic State group positions Tuesday around Ramadi in their latest push to recapture the Anbar capital from the jihadists. The Iraqi operation includes Iraqi troops as well as Shiite and Sunni fighters. Rwandan lawmakers approved a measure Tuesday that would pave the way for President Paul Kagame to seek re-election when his second term ends in 2017. Both houses of parliament voted in favor of a petition that calls for the removal of presidential term limits from the country's constitution. The proposal will now be taken up by a parliamentary committee. Mr. Kagame has effectively ruled Rwanda since the end of the 1994 genocide. This is VOA News. Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras faces a battle to secure parliamentary backing for the bailout deal worked out with the European Union. Henry Ridgewell has more.
Long lines still snake from ATM machines. The banks remain closed and close to collapse, and the €60 limit on withdrawals is still in place. Greece may have a bailout deal, but little has changed on the streets. And it's clear that under the deal, the hardship will go on. Many blame Germany for demanding more austerity. Others are turning on Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras and his Syriza party, which was elected on a promise of ending austerity. Henry Ridgewell, London.
The new bailout legislation specifies new taxes, pension reforms, and tighter supervision of government finances. European creditors are demanding parliamentary approval by today as a starting point for new negotiations on another bailout worth almost $95 billion. The United Nations is calling for the immediate cessation of attacks targeting civilians in Afghanistan, condemning the wounding or killing of more than 100 civilians over the past 2 days. UN envoy to Kabul, Nicholas Haysom, demanded the perpetrators be held accountable. He called the attacks cynical, cowardly acts of terror. Retired South African Archbishop Desmond Tutu is in a Cape Town hospital for what is being described as a persistent infection. Tutu's family expects he'll be released in the next day or two. Desmond Tutu, now 83 years old, won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1984 for his opposition to white minority rule in South Africa, which ended a decade later. At least 27 people have been killed in India after a stampede on the banks of a river where pilgrims gathered to observe a Hindu religious bathing festival. The stampede occurred Tuesday in the southern state of Andhra Pradesh as tens of thousands of people rushed to bathe in the Godavari River. More than 24 others were injured in the crush. The New Horizons space probe survived its historic flyby of Pluto. The U.S. Space Agency received an anticipated signal Tuesday from the spacecraft that it was still intact. The unmanned U.S. space probe did a very close flyby, taking pictures and collecting data as it zoomed past the icy world at 50,000 kilometers an hour. Scientists say information shows the planet is slightly larger than previously thought, and that more information is expected. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, July 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Rwanda's main opposition is disappointed over Parliament's constitutional amendment vote.
We are very disappointed today because we don't see any reason why the Parliament was rushing to start the discussions into this thing. Because they know very well that the Supreme Court is set a hearing of our case on the 9th of July, which is just 2 weeks away.
Dr. Frank Habineza is president of Rwanda's main opposition Democratic Green Party. Human rights groups call for the arrest of a Rwandan rebel leader in the DRC. A South Sudan former political detainee resumes his duty as SPLM Secretary General. And the leader of Swaziland's banned Pudemo opposition party is released after a year in detention.
In Swaziland, to criticize government, that is called terrorism. You know, in this part of the world, terrorism is different from the other part of the world. Saying the king is wrong, that is terrorism.
Mpalana Shangwe is the second deputy secretary of the Pudemo party. And police in Zimbabwe's capital detained 25 people following clashes between street vendors and local authorities. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The president of Rwanda's small but main opposition Democratic Green Party says he's disappointed by Parliament's vote on Tuesday for a constitutional amendment to allow President Paul Kagame to run for a third term. The Parliament said it was acting on the wishes of 3.7 million Rwandans who it said signed a petition to amend Article 101 of the Constitution, which limits the president to just two terms. The Green Party had challenged the move in the Rwandan Supreme Court, and the hearing is set for July 29th. Green Party President Dr. Frank Habineza said the parliament could have waited for the Supreme Court to first render its decision.
We are very disappointed today because we don't see any reason why the parliament was rushing to start the discussions into this thing. Because they know very well that the Supreme Court is set a hearing of our case on the 9th of July, which is just 2 weeks away. So we think that the parliament was rushing and there's no reason for rushing to take this, so we are very disappointed. But what we have realized is that we are getting more evidence because many people have been saying that we don't have evidence for our case. So this is a good evidence for us, which we are going to submit to the Supreme Court.
You have gone to court, the Supreme Court, to do what?
We've gone to the Supreme Court, first of all, to ask the Supreme Court to stop Parliament from changing the Constitution, and two, to give a deeper interpretation of Articles 101 and 193, which these people want to change. But we believe that these two articles are all intangible articles, the articles which cannot be changed. So we want the Supreme Court to confirm that.
The supporters of the Parliament and the President said they have gotten 3.7 million people, Rwandans, to sign a petition calling for the change of Article 101, which allows President Kagame to get another term. 3.7 million people, that's a lot of people.
Yeah, but Rwanda is a country of 11 million people. So if they say there's 3.7, that's not representative of the whole population. It's not even half of the population.
The Supreme Court is supposed to hear your case this month, but I heard that the lawyers who were supposed to represent you declined to represent you again. Why?
Yes, we have got another lawyer right now, and they are trying even to get another one from Kenya and another one from Uganda. So this time around, we believe that whatever happens, we shall have a lawyer, whether from Uganda or from Kenya or from Rwanda.
So let me ask you, did you ask the Rwandan Bar Association to give you a lawyer, and what did they say?
We don't find any reason to find. Actually, we're doing consulting with the East African Law Society. We are consulting with other lawyers in Rwanda. So we think that this time around we'll have a better representation.
Dr. Frank Habineza is the president of Rwanda's small but main opposition Democratic Green Party. He was speaking with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, where he had gone to look for a lawyer to represent his party at the Supreme Court. The U.S.-based Human Rights Watch is calling for urgent action to arrest Rwandan rebel leader Sylvester Madu-Chumura. The organization said his group, the FDLR, continues to be implicated in war crimes in eastern Congo 3 years after judges at The Hague issued a warrant for his arrest. Nick Long has more for VOA from Kinshasa.
The International Criminal Court, ICC, is seeking to bring Sylvester Muracimura to justice for alleged crimes committed by fighters under his command in 2009 and 2010. Human Rights Watch says during that period it can document killings of more than 700 civilians by the FDLR. The rights group says since 2012, FDLR fighters have killed another 94 civilians, raped dozens of women and girls, forcibly recruited children into their ranks, and destroyed countless homes. The FDLR is led by a core group of former Rwandan soldiers and militiamen who fled to the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo in 1994 after the Rwandan genocide. Human Rights Watch researcher in Congo, Ida Sawyer, told VOA Muracimura has served as military commander of the FDLR since 2003. The Congolese army conducted an offensive against the FDLR in 2009-10 and launched another one this February, known as Sukula 2, after the Swahili word for clean-up. But Sawyer says the offensives have not made much impact.
These operations so far have had limited success, and they don't appear to have included efforts to carry out targeted operations to arrest Muracimura.
The government says about 250 FDLR combatants have been captured and others killed, but according to Sawyer, these were low-level fighters. She also suggested the Congolese army may lack the will to launch wholehearted attacks on the FDLR, as until recently they were fighting a common enemy, the Rwandan-backed CNDP and M23 rebel movements. Human Rights Watch recognises that civilians have suffered heavily each time the FDLR comes under attack.
We have seen in past large-scale military operations against the FDLR have resulted in horrific attacks on civilians as both sides sought to punish the civilian population for alleged support to the enemy. We would not want to see that again, so we've called on the government and the UN peacekeeping mission to really focus on arresting and capturing the top command of the FDLR, including Muracimura.
The UN peacekeeping mission MONUSCO pulled out of Operation Sukula 2 after two Congolese generals facing allegations of serious human rights abuses were put in charge. MONUSCO Chief Martin Kobler told VOA the mission and the government are close to solving this problem and resuming cooperation on Sukula 2. Researcher Christoph Vogel, who has studied armed groups in the Congo, told VOA Muracimura is in poor health and might have difficulty escaping a sustained search operation. He said there is disagreement within the DRC government as to policy on the FDLR, and while MONUSCO could possibly go after Muracimura alone, it prefers to collaborate with Congolese forces. Nick Long for VOA News, Kinshasa.
In Switzerland, the banned opposition People's United Democratic Movement, PUDEMO Party, says while it is pleased with the release from prison of its leader, Mario Masuku, the release does not answer the people's main demand for democratic reforms. Masuku was arrested and detained a year ago, along with Maxwell Dlamini, General Secretary of the Swaziland Youth Congress, on terrorism charges for criticizing King Mswati III. As a condition for his release, he is barred from speaking at political rallies. Mpalana Shongwe, second deputy secretary of PUDEMO, says the time has come for the Swazi people to choose who they want to represent them.
We have had a judicial crisis for some time, and we do not believe that it is the judicial crisis that causes all this. What is the root cause of this? Are the appointing authorities, those who appoint the judiciary, the judges, and everybody, because there is no independence of the judiciary, no independence of the legislature and everything. So as long as the appointing authority lies with the king, we do not expect any change.
What reason did the Supreme Court give you now for releasing your people?
The three judges sitting there, they asked the same question. They asked the prosecution the same question as to it has been 14 months that you denied them bail. But now you are saying you no longer deny them bail. What are the new changes that has come? Because the prosecution claimed that there are new circumstances that are taking place in the country. But of course, he was referring to the firing of the CJA. He was referring to the judges, the first time being Swazis, all the Supreme Court judges. But that in itself does not remove the charges that they have been charged for. That is the Terrorism Act, which, by the way, forms part of the ILO America demands.
Mario Masuku was arrested along with the others because he criticized the king. And is it illegal to do that, to criticize the king?
there is a law that is called Suppression of Terrorism Act, which the government claims to have been influenced by the Americans, of course. But now they are abusing that law to suppress any dissenting opinions. But of course, in Swaziland, to criticize the king, to criticize government, that is a crime. That is called terrorism. You know, in this part of the world, terrorism is different from the other part of the world. Saying the king is wrong, that is terrorism.
Well, that is quite interesting. So the government, as part of the conditions for his release of Masuku now, is that
he should not address a public meeting.
Did he agree to that?
He was advised by his lawyer to agree on that.
So what does this do to the whole democracy movement in Swaziland? Does it further suppress the democratic movement?
It can be on twofold. On the other side of the coin, it can demoralize others. But on the other side of the coin, it can uplift the morale of those who want change. Because the whole game is about democratic reforms. We are saying time has come for the people to choose their own system of government. The people have a right to say, we want to be governed this way. Well, that has always been interpreted as if we say we don't want the monarch. We are saying the monarch can coexist side by side with democracy.
Umphalane Shangwe is the second deputy secretary of Swaziland's banned opposition Pudemo Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Mbabane. Today's Wednesday, July 15th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. Former South Sudan political detainee Pagan Amum resumed his duties Tuesday as Sudan People's Liberation Movement SPLM Secretary General. Amum was fired from the top ruling party post in February last year while he was in detention awaiting trial for his suspected role in an alleged plot to oust President Salva Kiir. The National Liberation Council voted last month to reinstate Amum, who has vowed to work for unity and peace. Waket Simon Wudu of VOA South Sudan in Focus program reports from Juba.
SPLM Oye! SPLM Oye! We are united for peace, freedom, and prosperity for all our people. Let us begin the work.
That is Pagan Amum reciting the SPLM liberation slogan at the party secretariat as he officially resumed his duties of secretary general.
Today is a day of change, and I'm beginning my duties in the office to change myself. From today, you will not hear me pointing fingers at any of the comrades and blaming any of the comrades. I will be pointing the fingers on myself, looking at my mistakes, and I am calling every comrade to look at your own mistakes, correct your mistakes, so that you can see my mistakes properly.
Amum was given a warm reception by members of the party secretariat, including Deputy Secretary General Ann Ito. Women ululated joyously, and members of the secretariat and youth sang patriotic songs as Amum spoke to reporters and party members at the SPLM headquarters. Amum said that under his leadership, the SPLM will focus on implementing the Arusha Agreement to reunify the ruling party. The deal was signed at the beginning of the year.
I want to say at this new stage, what the SPLM is going to deliver after this division, after this resolving this national crisis, is going to be a very strong unity, national unity, a sustainable and permanent peace in South Sudan, delivery on the promises that the SPLM has made during the struggle and during the election of services to our people.
The SPLM splintered into factions when fighting erupted in December 2013. The factions loyal to President Kiir and the one made up of former detainees like Amum have already taken steps to bury their differences and come together again under the umbrella of the SPLM. But the faction loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar is holding out. Amum says he will engage with the Machar's faction and bring it back into the SPLM within 2 months' time. Like Amum, Machar was accused of treason for his alleged role in the events of December 2013 that triggered the fighting that still continues around the country. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Police in Zimbabwe's capital, Harare, have detained 25 vendors following clashes between street traders and municipal police after the local authorities confiscated their goods. Thomas Chiripasi of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports from the capital, Harare.
Harare Municipal Police clashed with some illegal street traders in the central business district after they confiscated goods such as clothes, tomatoes, cabbages, and related items. Following the raids, the street traders, holding placards denouncing the local authority and singing revolutionary songs, gathered at the city council headquarters, demanding their wares back. Samuel Wazai, director of the National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe, told Studio 7's Jongakande Miri, while in police custody, that the clashes started when the angry vendors staged a peaceful protest outside the council offices.
They just wanted an explanation from the authorities how their goods were being confiscated. The fracas started when the municipal police started using force. We have been detained.
Wazai said some charges have already been laid against them. The Combined Harare Residents Association said it had dispatched a team of lawyers to the police station. Major Govu, a street vendor who was not detained by the police, said there is no reason for the council to team up with the Zimbabwe Republic Police to intimidate and lock them up, as vending is their only source of livelihood. Peter Jack, chairperson of another vendor's representative body, Mobile Youth Foundation, claimed that some agents of the National Spy Network, the Central Intelligence Organization, and youth militias allegedly linked to the government were part of the municipal police currently raiding vendors in the city.
What is happening is the municipal police, including the border gates, trained attacking vendors. Some are demanding money as bribe. They are confiscating those goods and beating the vendors in the streets.
But council spokesperson Michael Chideme denied that municipal police assaulted vendors today and that they were being assisted by state security agents.
No, the municipal police did not attack members of the informal sector. They were making sure that the members of the informal sector who had ransacked the townhouse offices were removed out of townhouse so that they don't destroy property. Well, they were paying for blood here.
Although the Harare City Council is relocating vendors to some designated vending points, the street traders say the new sites cannot cater for thousands of people currently selling various wares in the capital city central business district. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Donor countries that contribute the lion's share of funding to fight the global HIV epidemic have put the brakes on financial assistance. A new report found that more than half of the governments decreased their contributions to low- and middle-income countries to fight HIV/AIDS, with only a modest increase in assistance by some countries. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
In 2014, donations from the 14 primary donor governments for HIV control and prevention was $8.6 billion, an amount that has remained more or less stagnant for 2 years. Jennifer Cates is director of global health and HIV policy at Kaiser Family Foundation, which helped assemble the report along with UNAIDS. Cates says many Western countries have run up against the financial realities of budget cutbacks, and the pace of donations dedicated to helping fight HIV has begun to slow.
At the same time, to get to where public health officials and scientists and policymakers feel we can get to with what is known about HIV, more needs to be done. And that's a hard sell sometimes to donors and others who have many, many priorities right now.
The U.S. government remains the largest donor to the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, contributing $5.6 billion in 2014. That represented a modest adjusted increase of 1% over 2013 levels. Britain was the second biggest contributor at $1.1 billion. Germany's contribution remained flat in 2014, while the EU, Australia, Canada, Denmark, and France decreased their assistance. Kate says the financial support from donor countries has been key to fighting the AIDS epidemic, but
we must increase resources. So it is a lot of money on the one hand from donors and others, but it's still not enough to meet that goal and turn around the epidemic.
UNAIDS says the total global investment from all sources in response to the AIDS crisis is around $22 billion a year. Public health experts estimate that $30 billion is needed annually by 2030 to begin to end the crisis. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. Wade Van Niekerk clocked 19.94 seconds to set a new South Africa 200-meter record at the European Athletics Permit meet in Lausanne, Switzerland on Tuesday night. Van Niekerk's previous best was 20.19 seconds last year. He erases the old South African record of 20.04 seconds run by Anaso Jobodwana last month. In a separate heat, Jobodwana triumphed in 20.12 seconds. Nigerian Egweru Ogo Ogene clocked 10.21 seconds to place third in 100 meters, while Kenyans Edwin Meli and Vincent Rono were second and third in 800 meters and 3,000 meters, respectively. In football, Paraguay beat African champions Madagascar 4-2 at the FIFA Beach Soccer World Cup in Espino, Portugal, on Tuesday. Consequently, African representatives at the tournament, Madagascar and Senegal, are eliminated at the end of the preliminary group contest. In cricket, hosts Scotland beat Kenya by 7 wickets at the 2016 ICC 2020 World Cup qualifiers in Edinburgh on Tuesday. Today, Wednesday, Kenya play United Arab Emirates. Kenya lies second after 4 Group B fixtures, while Namibia is third in Group A after 3 matches. In rugby, hosts Uganda is promoted to the Confederation of African Rugby Division 1A after topping the standings with 15 points at the recent Division 1B contest in Kampala. Madagascar plays second with 14 points, followed by Senegal, Ivory Coast, Botswana, then Mauritius. In basketball, hosts Egypt beat Lebanon 67-62 to win the Arab Under-17 Boys Basketball Championships in Alexandria. Saudi Arabia beat Tunisia 50-40 in the bronze medal playoff. Finally, in boxing, Kenyan Commonwealth bronze medalist Benson Gicharu beat Azerbaijan's AIBA World Bantamweight Champion Javed Chalabiev on points in an international amateur encounter in Guiyang, China. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
And thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Retired South African Archbishop Desmond Tutu has been admitted to a Cape Town hospital for what's being called a persistent infection. Tutu's family expects he will be released in the next day or two, his daughter Umpo Tutu said in a statement released on Tuesday. Tutu has been treated for prostate cancer for many years. Rwandan lawmakers approved a measure Tuesday that would pave the way for President Paul Kagame to seek re-election when his second term ends in 2017. Both houses of parliament voted in favor of a petition that calls for the removal of presidential term limits from the country's constitution. That is it for this Wednesday, July 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Mark Owoman, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barty in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, President Obama soon makes his last trip to Africa as president. He will attend the Global Entrepreneurial Summit in his ancestral homeland, Kenya. He will also travel to the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, will join him. and she will be Shaka Sali's guest next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.